Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
And now, back to a man who didn't let being named one of the 100 most important radio talk show hosts in America go to his head.
Woo! Woo! Yes! In your face!
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Thanks very much for hanging around with us. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. My website is www.jbsba.com. Hope you'll subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And I think you'll enjoy it. And if you don't, it's easier to unsubscribe than it is to subscribe. You do it all by yourself. We don't even have to be involved. We've got that worked out. The technology worked out where you can subscribe and unsubscribe all by yourself. Gary Schilling is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, a longtime member of our Brain Trust, an outstanding member of our Brain Trust. He's the president of A. Gary Schilling & Company. He's the author of a book that you've heard me talk about many times on the show, even when he's not here. The book is called Deflation, and he's our good friend, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be with you, Jim.
It's good to have you back. And by the way, folks, many of you read Forbes magazine, and you've seen Gary's Gary's byline there for years and years. He's been a columnist with Forbes. Gary, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is, you know, you and I have talked a lot about deflation, and of course, you can't talk about deflation without talking about inflation. But what I wanted you to ask you about is this question: are we in what you would consider to be a deflationary or an inflationary economic environment?
We're still, I think, trending toward deflation. Obviously, this has not been a straight line. It's been going on literally since 1981, when inflation was well into double digits. But one of the manifestations of that, I think, has been in the last year, the fact that long-term interest rates, Treasury bond yields, have actually declined despite the Federal Reserve raising short-term interest rates. Now, most people have been scratching their heads on that, and Fed Chairman Greenspan called it a conundrum because he couldn't understand why you didn't have long-term interest rates rising as well as while they're pushing up short rates. But I think it's because we are in a deflationary environment globally. We've got excess supply of almost everything. Most industries are facing huge price pressures, and as a result, we simply haven't seen inflation. We haven't seen the big jump in oil prices spread to the general inflationary climate, for example. So it's a very different world, and it may not be evident to everybody. And most of us think, of course, that the prices of everything we buy go up. I mean, that's human nature. But in actual fact, there are very strong deflationary forces at work out there.
Well, a lot of people. Well, let's get back to inflation in just a minute. And I apologize for pulling out a short-term example, but recently we saw a spike in a number of commodities, haven't we?
Well, commodities, yeah,
gold,
that's true.
Gold and copper?
Yeah, that's true. Part of that has been simply a response to the dollar. They go up and down with the dollar. If you look at gold in euro currency terms, it's been flat as a pancake. It's really reflecting the dollar's up and down. But beyond that, if you look at if you have a dollar increase in commodity prices on average, the effects on final producer good prices, wholesale prices, is 6 cents. It's a very minor pass-through because there's so much labor and transportation, packaging, profits, everything between those commodities and the finished producer goods that the commodities have very little to do with it. It's the old story that a loaf of bread can cost you $3, but the wheat in it is a couple of pennies.
Mm-hmm.
And that influence of commodities is going down over time, as is perfectly logical, because goods now have more brain power in them and less raw materials.
Right.
In other words, they're not producing steel, which takes a lot of coke, iron, or raw materials, limestone. We're producing computer chips, which are a little silicone, a little copper wire, and the rest is brain power.
Mm-hmm. Well, globalization is one of the most interesting phenomena to me, and a lot of people think that it's a bad thing. I actually think it's the trade manifestation of our intellect and it's been going on for thousands of years. It's just that it's come to a point now where we can actually transfer work much faster than we ever have been before. So it's become a little scarier. But my question is, doesn't globalization contribute to lower inflation?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the biggest deflationary forces because of the ability to produce things wherever it's cheapest in the world. In the case of many manufactured goods, that's places like China because they have such low labor costs. But it's not just low labor costs, because they have to construct the infrastructure. You have to have the transportation to get the goods from China, in this case, to the U.S. It's more than just cost differences. But
Gary, hold on to that thought.
It's speeding up, which is scary.
Hold on to that thought. I want to come back to this, and we're going to right after these messages. I want to talk a little bit more about globalization with Gary, and then we're going to talk about whether he's concerned about the U.S. budget deficit. 22. Stay with us. We're back. It's 17:10. I like that song. I'll play a little bit for you there. Gary Schilling is our guest. He's a good friend and a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's the president of A. Gary Schilling Company. He's the author of Deflation and an outstanding monthly newsletter that I'm a happy recipient of. It's very important. I would read it just because Gary's got a great commentary on the back page. It's always a lot of fun. It's always pithy and has some good information in it. But there's some outstanding information, folks, in here about the economy, and I encourage you to check it out. Gary, won't you give us the website and tell us how we can subscribe?
Yeah, it's just agaryschilling.com, www.agaryschilling.com, and it's agaryschilling. There's no C in Schilling. It's not S-C-H, it's S-H.
Right, and that's .com on the end there. So check that out when you get a chance, and be sure to tell him that I sent you. Gary, and by the way, the book Deflation is still available too, isn't it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. And that's that you can get.
You got
that
the new edition too, haven't you?
Or in bookstores, either way.
Right, and there's a new edition out.
Right, yeah. McGraw-Hill published a sequel to their first Deflation book, and again, that's available through bookstores.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. I know you will learn a lot about the economy and about how the economy works with that book as well. Gary, I want to get back to globalization and. Aren't we in a really unique time in the history of the United States, for example, because we're moving from, you know, when the industrial age really took hold in the first part of the 20th century, and people went from the farms to the factories, that wasn't that much of a transition. But in the latter part of the 20th century, as we went from the factories to computer desks, that was a lot bigger transition, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was. And what has happened here, is, as you say, is that there's nothing new about this. I mean, the idea that progress creates risk for people with jobs that are being outmoded, there's nothing new about that. That's been going on since the Industrial Revolution was developed in the late 1700s in England and New England in this country. But what is happening now, and we've written extensively about this, is the speeding up of this process.
Right. It's the velocity of change.
Yeah, and it makes it tougher for people to adapt, because people have always adapted. Some people never do, but most people do. And what happens is that... that rather than make the widgets, people end up making the machines that make the widgets, and this adds productivity. It adds value, and people get paid higher wages. They have more purchasing power as a result. As I say, the only problem right now is I think the process is running much faster than usual, so it's creating more of an adaption problem.
Exactly. We've got a problem with redeploying our workforce, because the truth is Americans are benefiting in many ways from globalization in terms of holding prices down, but of course somebody would say, how can I benefit if I don't have a job? Well, therein lies the problem. What we've got to do is we've got to figure out how, and I don't see the politicians addressing this like they ought to, Gary. I think we are. I think this is an area that the government could be involved in more, and that is getting our people redeployed for 21st century jobs.
Well, it is really an education and training job, and you know there's a push and a pull. I mean, it is necessary for the programs to be there and the incentives to be there, but it's also necessary for people to realize that which way the wind is blowing and you know, stop trying to fight this and simply accept the reality and to get retrained and educated.
Right.
I mean, we've got an awful lot of people in this country who leave school early, who don't complete high school, who can't even read after they do finish high school, who don't go on to any kind of vocational or higher education or training. I mean, it's a push and a pull.
Right. Gary, let's move over and talk about the current budget deficit. Are you concerned about it?
I'm not as concerned as most people. The deficit in relation to the economy is not nearly as big as some people would think from the size of it in billions of dollars. It's far smaller than it was, 15, 20 years ago, for example. There is concern, obviously, but I don't think it's the end of the world. But one thing I do think is interesting about this is that the effective tax rate for individuals, and that's if you take all the tax collections, personal tax collections by the federal government on income, capital gains, and so on, and you divide that by personal income, which is income from wages, salaries, rents, interest, dividends, pension payments, and so on and so forth. Historically, that has averaged about 12.5%. And it's amazing how consistent it has been since 1960, because mm-hmm. the economy has changed, tax laws have changed, but it always seems to average about that. And when it gets above that, as it did in the late 90s, we saw that and we said something's going to happen, big tax cuts or something to bring that back. It's almost like an invisible hand propels it. And indeed, we did have the big tax cuts, but now it's well below that. And sure, President Bush doesn't want to, he's not going to advocate tax cuts, but there are higher user fees. There's probably going to be increased enforcement. The IRS will probably have more people auditing because that's a very profitable way, in effect, for them to gain tax revenues, probably closing the loopholes. I think any business ought to be aware of this, and any individual, that you may not have higher tax rates, but you're probably going to pay more taxes.
Right. Well, hopefully, you know, we can grow the economy to the point where the revenues will be there through productivity and not so much through increases in taxes on the work that we've already done. It's 10 till. We're going to be right back with Gary Schilling. When we come back, I'm going to ask him what he thinks about the 2005 economy. How's it looking out there? 10 till. Stay with us. We're back. It's 7-2.
And you need a helping hand.
I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And when we're down in trouble and we need a helping hand to understand how things are going out there in the economy, we call our good friend Gary Schilling, and he helps us out. We read his outstanding monthly newsletter, which is called Insight. A. Gary Schilling's Insight, and it's an outstanding publication. I encourage you to check it out, and you can find out more about it at agaryschilling.com, and that's S-H-I-L-L-I-N-G, agaryschilling.com. So I encourage you to do that, and don't forget his book is called Deflation. There's a new version out now by McGraw-Hill that I encourage you to read. I know you'll benefit tremendously. You'll get a better understanding of how the economy works if you read anything that Gary says. You got a column coming out in the next edition of Forbes, is that right?
Yeah, I do one usually every other edition.
Yeah.
And, you know, one thing we might just spend a minute to on John or Jim talking about, sorry, is Social Security, because there's all this discussion about these individual accounts and so on. You mentioned in the last segment about productivity, but you know the real key to making Social Security work when the post-war babies retire, and there's a lot of talk about this, is not these individual accounts per se. They may help a bit, but it's really productivity. Because if you think about it, what the post-war babies need when they retire is not zillions of dollars, but it's enough productive capability of the economy that those still working will be able to produce enough for themselves and for the post-war babies.
Mm-hmm.
If there isn't enough to go around, then having all the money in the world won't mean anything because it'll just get inflated away as everybody's bidding for an inadequate supply of goods and services. So the individual accounts can help to the extent that that money goes into increasing our productive capability, and that's back to education, training, technology, capital investment, all the things that make us able to produce more with the same number of hours worked. So that's the real key to this whole thing, and it's something that isn't really understood by a lot of people, including politicians in Washington, but to the extent that we get saving, investment, education, training, that's what's really important in a lot of ways, including solving this post-war baby retirement problem.
Do you think that there is a dividend waiting to happen when baby boomers retire from the standpoint that they won't actually stop working, they'll continue to be productive in their own themselves?
Well, sure. I mean, people are living longer.
In a way that their fathers and mothers did not.
Yeah, right. People are living longer. They're healthier longer. And, what do they want to do? Sit on the front porch and watch the cars go by? I mean, playing golf is fun, but full-time, not for most people.
My elbows won't stand it.
So I think people will work longer, and we'll probably see an increase in the retirement age. Why shouldn't we? I mean, with the increase in lifespans, that's perfectly reasonable.
Right, absolutely. When 65 was the retirement age 60 years ago, many people didn't make it to
65. That's right, and that was originally put in for that. You know, the idea was that most people pretty much dropped dead when they reached that age, and those that lived on, okay, they got Social Security, but the system was not geared for people who are now, you know, somebody 50 today is he's on average going to live to about 80.
It's a very different world. They didn't plan on the success of modern medicine. Gary, take a look into Gary Schilling crystal ball and talk to us about the 2005 economy.
Well, the economy has been growing robustly. It'll probably grow more slowly as the year progresses because we no longer have the effects of the big tax cuts. We no longer have the effects of declining interest rates. The Federal Reserve is raising interest rates, quite the reverse. So I think we'll see slower growth in the course of the year. Business capital spending has been strong, but it's not such a big sector. It's only 10% of the economy versus 75% when you include consumer spending and housing.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll probably grow more slowly. The year 2006 is the one to look for because that's the one where we very well could see a peak in economy and another recession shaping up. But I think this year is probably going to be a good year, declining growth rates, but still a good year by most standards.
Right. Gary, we need to wrap it up and let you get out of here. Give us the website again, please.
Yeah, it's AGARYSHILLING.com. AGARYSHILLING.com.
And they can subscribe to your monthly newsletter there.
Right.
It's called Insight. It's outstanding. The back page is worth the price. And also, don't forget to check out his book, Deflation. Gary, thank you for being here. As always, it's been a pleasure.
Well, as a matter of fact, we have a book that we give with the new subscribers, which is a compilation of all those commentaries from the back page. It's called Letting Off Steam.
All right, and that's part of the subscription to the newsletter, right?
Right.
Thank you, Gary.
Right.
See you next time.
Okay,
got to go
Jim.
For this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.